Hi everyone, Siobhan Chapman here, and welcome to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Investors are digesting economic and earnings data and anticipating inflation data this week. Here to discuss all of this is Jason Dreho, Head of Asset Allocation Americas. Jason, welcome.
Happy Monday. Good to be here.
Perfect. So let's get started. Let's start with the latest developments on tariffs. With President Trump expected to announce tariffs on steel and aluminum today, how do you interpret these latest developments?
Well, so the tariffs on steel and aluminum, he even said last night on Air Force One that's the intention is to impose them today. Still awaiting, you know, specific details and confirmation and the timeline of when they would take effect, whether it is literally today or if it's a few days down the line. Most of these imports of steel and aluminum come from a handful of countries, Canada, Mexico, Brazil, Korea, you know, Japan. So relatively sort of narrow in scope in terms of who would be impacted overall. I think even more important than those specific tariffs, which are not particularly surprising, he did that during his first administration, is the comments on Friday that he made regarding reciprocal tariffs and opposing them having announcements this week. It's unclear at this moment what exactly that means. You know, which countries would be impacted, which goods and sectors, how to overall sort of interpret it. It could simply mean that if you look at the U.S. average tariff rate of, you know, only a few percentage points versus, say, in Europe, if it's, you know, 5 or 6 percentage points, does that mean reciprocal tariffs is that he would raise the U.S. tariff rate to match what other countries are already doing, rather than saying, you know, imposing 10 or 15 to 25% new tariffs on certain goods. So we'll find out what some of those details are. If we look at the market performance in equities today, it's sort of indicating the markets are not, you know, too concerned about what's going to happen. The S&P 500 and NASDAQ futures are both up. And then if we go to, you know, what happened in European equities, you know, at least thus far today, they are up by and large across the board, the Asian equities as well. So the markets have been taking this in stride, which could be some signs of being a little bit immune and numb to the tariff news. Or it's also possible that it's, you know, not as bad as feared. I think the way we would interpret it is the news of reciprocal tariffs, the tariffs on steel and aluminum, are still consistent with our overall kind of base case, which we define as aggressive tariffs, focused heavily on China with tariffs across, going up on Chinese goods and sort of permanently staying higher, as well as tariffs on selected goods industries from all countries, such as steel, aluminum, and other, you know, goods that are viewed as for almost like national security purposes. But what it doesn't entail is a universal tariff across the board. So all goods are subject to a 10 or 15% tariff. So yes, more tariff news, but if we start to look at what's happened over the past week, beginning with the announcement of a 25% tariff on Canada and Mexico, that ultimately was not imposed with a delay for 30 days, the reciprocal tariffs seem like it's kind of consistent based on what we can conjecture and know with our overall base case. So yes, more tariff news, but maybe in line with what we and others are thinking, which is why the markets are reacting negatively this morning to that news.
So on Friday, we got the January payrolls data. What did it say about the state of the economy?
Well, if we look at that payrolls data and also in the context of other data we've been getting on the economy, it says the economy and growth in particular is still solid overall. Now, if we look at the specific details of the January payrolls report, the headline number of new jobs was 143,000. That was below the consensus forecast of 175. But the prior 2 months, you know, for November and December, there were upward revisions in the estimated number of jobs created those 2 months that a combined 100,000. So if you add that to the 143, the net result suggests that we actually exceeded CUX expectations. And so overall, you know, still strong kind of job growth. Now, I think there are a few data points within the overall report that are kind of interesting. First is the average hourly earnings rose 0.5% month over month. Expectations were 0.3%. And there's a bit of an uptick versus relative kind of trends, which has been hovering around 0.3 or 0.4%, you know, for a number of months. The unemployment rate fell 0.1% from 4.1 to 4%. And the participation rate of, you know, for, you know, what percentage of the population is actually participating in the labor market, it also increased 0.1% to 62.6. So what it suggests overall is the labor market that had been loosening quite a bit over the past, you know, couple of years, maybe it's no longer loosening. And that was a key reason for why the Fed was willing to cut rates aggressively, you know, concerned about it loosening too much. But this report, and it's only one report, but if you put it in the context of the past couple months, suggests that perhaps the labor market is no longer loosening. It's kind of holding steady, you know, where it is. And as a source of disinflation, perhaps that is now kind of, you know, coming to an end, or at least abating to where it was. But I think it's important if we look at, you know, this data along with other economic data, and to think about, you know, the discussion we just had on tariffs, is that so far the economic data that we're seeing is consistent with our base case for the year, which is, you know, I'd call it classified as kind of, you know, benign growth or growth, you know, even with tariffs. And while there's certainly, you know, tariffs, you know, could get worse and could be a bit of a drag on growth and inflation, overall, the conditions have been relatively benign. The one that I would say is that, you know, while overall we expected to be the story for the full year, if you take a full year perspective, what we've seen over the past couple of years is that oftentimes the market's views on the economy can shift quite a bit based off of one or maybe 2 months of data points. We saw that last year where, you know, inflation that was strong first part of the year led to lending investors to kind of really start to fear stagflation, you know, by April. That abated, so by the summer it was actually more about kind of growth concerns as the labor market seemed to cool quite a bit. Those concerns eased, and then around the election, it was back to kind of reflation, you know, concern. And then by the start of this year, it kind of was more back to a more of a benign growth environment. And you can go back to 2023, where it was also this debate between soft and hard landing, and the views was kind of shift around quite a bit. So right now, things are look pretty good for the economy. Ultimately, we think that's the story for the full year. But investors should not be surprised if, you know, over the next couple of months, the data comes in some way, either growth, you know, or inflation data that, you know, causes a little bit of hiccup in what has been a relatively benign environment thus far. And that's true for the data that we received up through, you know, on Friday.
Jason, you mentioned that inflation is the greater risk rather than growth. What do you expect from the CPI data this week, and what could it mean for the Fed rate cuts?
Well, the reason why I say inflation is a greater risk than growth is you go back to the average hourly earnings. Of rising a little more than expected, the labor market no longer being a source of disinflation. So perhaps that's a sign that the disinflation trends, you know, are coming to an end, and inflation could either get stuck or even kind of reaccelerate. You couple this with other policy news, like the whole discussion about tariffs, you know, those lead to higher prices, all else equal, and then would be inflationary. Also on Friday, there was the data point from the University of Michigan, they do a consumer sentiment survey. This includes inflation expectations. They jumped from, for 1 year ahead, the inflation expectations jumped from 3.3% last month in January to 4.3%, you know, so far in February. That's a sizable increase, well above expectations, and it likely reflects concerns that the consumers now have about tariffs lifting, you know, prices overall. So that's where I think the risk between the conditions of the economy running strong, the tariff risks, also any signs of kind of, you know, tightening a little bit of the labor market because of immigration is being tamped down. That is sort of the more concerning variable versus growth, inflation being getting stuck or rising a little bit that would alter the, you know, what the Fed could do, which puts a lot of emphasis on this January CPI data that comes out on Wednesday. The consensus forecast is it's going to rise 0.3% month over month for both the headline and core, so about kind of holding steady. But there's also kind of seasonal quirks in the data that January and the first quarter overall tends to be a period of time where there's big seasonal adjustments. Oftentimes prices in different industries and different products are reset on starting January 1. Depending on how the models adjust for it and, you know, and what actually happens, you could see upside surprise or downside surprise. And so there's certainly the risk is that if it's on the upside, given the other sort of inflation concerns, that could be, you know, concerning for the markets after a period of relatively benign overall macro data. In terms of what it means for the Fed, any signs that the labor market is getting tighter and inflation is directionally, you know, moving higher or at least not coming down as the Fed expects, that will likely, you know, shift what the Fed can do. The market pricing in terms of Fed cuts kind of, it gets priced out. So that's what that's something worth watching is what that data does. And of course, the market will react to that. Fed Chair Jay Powell is also testifying before Congress. He's likely not to say obviously very much about what they intend to do with monetary policy. A lot of the focus will be on how the Fed will react to various fiscal policy measures, including the tariff increases, potential, you know, fiscal policy, either spending or tax cuts. So he's likely to sort of say, you know, kind of what he said recently, and that they just, you know, are assessing the incoming data, will evaluate policy accordingly and make decisions there. But given where the overall data is as of this moment, the Fed is sort of, you know, justifiably, you know, able to kind of sit on the sidelines and do so kind of comfortably, at least for perhaps another meeting or two, But if the inflation story changes, that clearly alters what they may be able to do and what they have to communicate to the market, because the market will assume that the Fed is going to cut, less than what they're already pricing, assuming, which is less than two cuts of this year.
Jason, with all the news on tariffs, the economy, earnings, and AI, how would you say that markets are performing?
Well, it's certainly been the case that for the past few weeks, there's been a lot of information flow from, the Trump administration coming in on January 20th to the news about DeepSeek. We're about 75% of the way done of the fourth quarter earnings season. It's a lot of information to digest there. And if you take it all in, if you look at just how the equity markets, the S&P 500 has performed, it is up, about 2.5% year to date. So still a positive story. Other risk assets and other equity markets have done quite well. I'd say if there's maybe three high level observations, I would say just that are sort of stand out as interesting and noteworthy. The first is that while equities are up, there's definitely been sort of a broadening out of performance. And you can see that in a variety of different ways. Most prominently, the Mag 7, which has been the dominant sort of driver of the markets, U.S. equity markets specifically for the past couple of years, they are actually underperforming the rest of the market. You think about the S&P 500 or the S&P 493. So they're underperforming by a few percentage points year to date. The tech sector is, one of the worst performing sectors this year. Outside of the U.S., we're seeing, equities in both the developed markets and emerging markets actually outperform. And in Europe in particular is doing quite well. The Eurozone up, nearly 8%. So definitely kind of a broadening out of performance after it's been very concentrated for the past couple of years. Whether that will continue, if it does, that's a healthy thing for the equity markets overall, but it is a sort of a noteworthy trend. A second thing is, I think volatility has been relatively contained overall. The VIX index is around 16.5. That is up from some of the lows in the recent months. But, think about historically, a VIX of over 20 is usually a sign of a little bit more stress in the markets. And that 16.5 suggests relatively contained sort of fear overall in the markets, despite a lot of concerns and certainly headline risk regarding tariffs. And you can see that in other markets as well. A fixed income volatility has come down a little bit this year. So that's lower or relatively contained vol is the second story after the broadening equity and market performance. And then the third kind of general theme is just the performance of gold that continues to kind of grind higher. Already this morning, the Monday morning, it's up roughly 1.5%, and year to date it's up 10%. It's benefiting as sort of a bit of a flight to safety bid given the political, geopolitical uncertainties. But there's also clearly a strong sort of secular demand as investors, but particularly central banks, diversify their reserve holdings or find gold. That's more of a medium-term outlook, but it's providing sort of a fundamental and definitely a sort of technical backdrop in supporting kind of gold overall.
Let's turn to what investors should be doing in their portfolios. What are CIO's recommendations?
Well, I just want to highlight a few of our key messages. To go back to my opening comments that the tariff scenario sort of playing out so far with our kind of baseline expectation of being aggressive, but not kind of the worst case scenarios. The economic data is still kind of benign so far. We think that ultimately is kind of the story for the year, but there will be some hiccups along the way, all of which means that there is more to go in equities. So, we're still kind of confident in the upside for equities this year, even if the path is going to be somewhat choppy and things may be volatile in the near term until we get some policy uncertainty, but still have confidence that, especially coming through the earnings season thus far, that the guidance we have for earnings suggests that the S&P 500 could still make our target of 6,600 by year. And nothing so far would be indicative of needing to alter that view. Within equities, the broadening out performance I mentioned, shifting away from the Mag 7, from the tech sector, healthy development, and certainly from a long-term perspective, we always recommend diversified equity allocations. So the other parts of the portfolio that have lagged, those should be benefiting this year. That said, though, we still kind of like this tech sector as the most attractive opportunity. We still think the AI sector, the AI opportunity is a multi, almost trillion-dollar opportunity. There's some maybe perhaps fatigue with it among investors, but I think what we're seeing this year is a bit of a pivoting away from, looking at AI, building infrastructure to looking at AI applications. And so there's still definitely opportunities with an AI. We think that will continue to help power the tech sector overall. A lot of political risks still out there from within the U.S. in terms of, tariff risk, maybe geopolitically, issues with, still with, the situation in the Middle East, and Ukraine. Other potential political risks that could, surface. So navigating an environment, navigating political risks is something that investors should think about. A lot of volatility, and with the volatility overall relatively contained, this is not a bad opportunity to, use that to your advantage through either hedging or structured solutions to take advantage of the volatility at relatively attractive terms. The last thing is, to go for gold. As I mentioned, we see good upside in gold, overall. Have opportunities to help diversify portfolios. We expect gold to get up to about 3,000 by March and then sort of maintain around that level for the rest of the year. And then the final thing is, well, rates have been sort of chopping around. We would suggest overall that, buy more of the intermediate part of the curve, like the 5-year duration, in a part. Yields could certainly go lower if there are growth concerns, but they could easily back up if the economy continues to run strongly and inflation concerns actually, pick up in some way. So without having to take a lot of duration risk, there's opportunities to get interesting income and yield and high quality fixed income in more of the intermediate part of the curve. So a lot of different things investors could be doing in the portfolio in what is, still a relatively, healthy and benign market conditions overall, despite a lot of headline and news and policy risk. The actual fundamentals still remain relatively solid.
Okay, perfect. Jason, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.